case of the morning, which is Egan Marine Corp. versus Great American, 07-2655. Mr. O'Malley.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is John O'Malley. I represent Egan Marine Corporation and Service Welding and Shipbuilding, LLC. This case comes today before this court on a grant of summary judgment to the defendant, Great American Insurance Company of New York. This is a breach of a marine insurance policy. That is what this case involves. There is a tremendous amount of discussion in the case about OPA 90, and that enters into the discussion. But the point of this case involves the interpretation of a contract between two parties. Egan has asserted a claim for the breach of the duty of good faith and fair dealing as well. Again, that is another maritime claim. The district court granted summary judgment to Great American, and we have identified three key grounds of error by the district court. The first involves the interpretation of the insurance policy. The second is the fact that the district court ignored undisputed facts, primarily those set forth in the undisputed affidavit of Dennis Egan, who is the president of Egan Marine Corporation and was the individual primarily responsible for Egan Marine Corporation service welding and shipbuilding, and in addition, raising that barge that sunk in the Chicago Sanitary Canal above the water. The third issue was that the district court erred in summarily granting summary judgment to Great American on the claim for the breach of the duty of good faith and fair dealing. Now, the record facts and admissions establish that the district court erred with respect to each issue. Egan requests that this court find that the policy limit applicable to the Lisa E., the $5 million limit applicable to that vessel, which was the vessel that was in charge of the barge EMC 423, which was the vessel that was pushing the...
I thought that the accident happened... make any difference who was in charge or what was going on, because this was some thing was loaded on this hot load that they were not aware of it, and it was static electricity, and
that was an issue that we talked about. But as Great American points out, and as the district court points out, that goes to an issue of fault. OPA 90 is a strict liability statute. In other words, the questions of negligence, the questions of fault are completely irrelevant. The question is, who was the owner of the barge? Who was the operator of the barge? And the facts establish that the operator...
The barge is Egan, and that's the responsibility there. But the tugboat, and if there were three or four other boats that were involved... It all had to do with the barge, didn't it?
There were two vessels involved.
Right.
The Lisa E. was pushing ahead the barge EMC 423.
Right, but and just to add on, so as you answer Judge Evans' question, the EMC 423, not only did it explode, but then the Coast Guard also repeatedly said that EMC was responsible for the oil spill.
That's precisely
that explosion.
That is precisely correct. EMC, Egan Marine Corporation, was responsible for the oil spill.
EMC 43, which was the container,
the barge
that had the oil in it.
Well, that is the position that Great American is arguing, and it's come up with this concept in its brief and otherwise of a quote-unquote responsible vessel under OPA 90. There is no such thing. What OPA 90 talks about is a responsible party for a designated vessel. OPA 90 is not an in rem statute. It is an in personam statute. The responsible party was Egan Marine Corporation. The responsible party was Egan Marine because it was in charge of the barge EMC 423.
But each is separately insured. Mm-hmm. 423 has a separate insurance policy with $5 million, and it is the one that leak or spilled or whatever, the oil, which seems to be what the focus is. The tug was separately insured. It didn't spill any oil.
To answer your question, first of all, there was one insurance policy, and there were separate insurance limits applicable to each vessel. Second of all, we spent a lot of time...
Separate premium and separate for each vessel.
Yes, separate premium charge, separate limit applicable to each vessel under this insurance policy. The question is not involved with whether the oil actually spilled off the vessel, because we spent a lot of time talking about the case Emily S. And in addition, I cited a number of other cases. All of those cases contradict Great American's claim that liability under Open 90 is limited solely to the vessel. And this comes back to something that the Great American has really created out of whole cloth, which is this concept of a responsible vessel.
But each case you cite does tie back to the tug in some way of being responsible. And even the tug, I think, that punctured another one. It was the one that actually leaked, not the tug, that was held responsible.
Each one of those is a responsible under the terms of OPA. What does OPA 90 talk about? It talks about the operator of a vessel from which oil was spilled. The operator of the dumb barge EMC 423 was the Lisa E. and her crew. The Lisa E. had full and complete navigational control over the barge EMC 423. The barge EMC 423 had no propulsion. It had no crew other than that provided by the Lisa E. All of those factors go directly into the concept of operator under the terms of OPA 90.
Wouldn't that, though, have to require some kind of negligence on the operator? Something where the operator mishandled or was drunk or something or other that caused this barge to go awry. What happened, they think, is some kind of an electrical charge set off this unsuspecting volatile fuel. I keep wondering, Exxon?
Exxon.
Yeah, they seem to be the one responsible for the problem, but this act focuses strictly on the vessel.
It focuses specifically on the operator, and again, it's an in personam statute.
The statute does, but I would imagine that there's some common tort liability that theories that could be advanced by Egan against Exxon if they put this hot load on and they were not aware that it was a hot load.
I would agree. There are theories against Exxon, but in January when this accident took place, Exxon wasn't involved. The Coast Guard went directly to EMC 423, and EMC 423 was strictly liable to clean up that accident. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I'll take it a step further. Let's focus back again on the insurance policy, which is something that we haven't talked about a lot, but is absolutely the key. There is absolutely no requirement under this insurance policy that there be a designation of liability. There is absolutely no requirement that there be a finding of liability. Coverages 1, 2, and 3 of this insurance policy encourage and provide coverage for a voluntary cleanup. And there's an important reason for that, because it's a lot less expensive to do a voluntary cleanup for the insurance company than it is to wait and to go through an adjudication with the Coast Guard, where defenses like Act of God or others, that wasn't an issue. And Great American came onto the site, and Egan, and they cleaned it up.
They voluntarily cleaned up EMC 423 spill.
And in addition, they also voluntarily cleaned up the Lisa E. And this is another point where was set forth in the deposition, absolutely, of Dennis Egan, but in his affidavit as well. And all of those facts were undisputed. What happened was the Lisa E. was pushing the barge EMC 423 down the canal. The barge blew up. Now, what went on from there was the Lisa E. detached, went back, pushed the barge EMC 423, and went, got it up against so it wouldn't go underwater. Eventually, it was sunk by water pouring on it from the fire department to put the fire out. The Lisa E. detached and went on a missing crewman, a man overboard situation, because one of the crewmen of the Lisa E. was blown overboard by virtue of this explosion. The Lisa E. was covered in oil. It was damaged. Parts of the barge EMC 423 damaged the Lisa E., and it was absolutely covered in oil.
So E 423 spilled oil on the tug.
The event resulted in oil and other damage to the Lisa E. And the Lisa E. was going up and down performing its search for its missing crew member when the Coast Guard arrived on the scene. They arrested the Lisa E., and there is a question
because they had to clean it up.
Because they had to clean it up, and because it had oil on it, and because there was a very serious event going on. There was some tension, obviously, because we had a man overboard situation, but there was an order to the dock. Eventually, the Lisa E. was ordered, moved into the containment boot. It was ordered repaired, and it was ordered cleaned up before it was permitted to leave. All of those facts under the Open 90 would extend liability to Egan Marine. Standing
well, Lisa,
alone.
No, but all these cases that you cited for that proposition, they were all situations where the tugboats themselves didn't discharge the oil, but they were somehow responsible for an accident that caused it to spill or something like that. None of these cases that you cited are quite like our situation, where it was just the independent barge that exploded that caused the problem, not the tugboat.
Just to answer your question, very simply, it doesn't matter under Open 90. In other words, what Great American is arguing is the only liability that can ever potentially attach under the policy is where the oil actually comes off the vessel. That's not true under Open 90, and it's completely irrelevant under the insurance policy. Again, the focus on the policy is a voluntary cleanup, and it extends coverage for that voluntary cleanup. I'm into my period, so I'll briefly step away.
Mr. Carbon?
May it please the Court, good morning. James Carbon of the firm Duane Morris, representing Capelli, Great American Insurance Company. The District Court got it entirely correct when it held that Egan, as owner-operator of the tug Lisa E., was never at risk, exposed for, subject to, whatever term we care to use, for liability under the Oil Pollution Act of 1990.
What if the Lisa E. would have, it was pushing, not pulling, correct?
Yes.
So what if it was pushing the barge and pushed the barge into a bridge abutment and then we had this catastrophe?
A great hypothetical, Your Honor, and we have a similar situation in one of the cases that Egan relies upon so heavily, the Emily S., the Puerto Rico case, where the Coast Guard designated both the barge and the tug as the responsible vessel. And in that case, the tug was the responsible cause of the incident because in that case, the tow line, it was a tow, not a push, but it's analogous, the tow line of the tug parted, allowing the barge to run aground, the hull to rupture, and the spill to occur. In that case, the Coast Guard designated both the tug and the barge as the responsible vessels. And I want to point out, Your Honor, that
would both of them be responsible, or would only the pushing tug be the responsible party?
The statute answers that, Your Honor. Section 2702A of the statute provides that the vessel which discharges is the responsible vessel, or, to answer Mr. O'Malley's point, the owner-operator of that vessel which discharges is the responsible party that must respond and clean up the spill. Section 2702D provides that where the party can show that the act was entirely the fault of a third party, such as a towing tug, that party can also be a responsible party.
So both of them, then?
Mm-hmm.
Under that hypothetical, both of them would be responsible. The leaking tug, I mean, the leaking barge and the at-fault tug.
Yes, Your Honor, and that's what 2702D says. It says responsible party or parties. So it contemplates exactly the scenario that the Emily S. encountered in the hypothetical that Your Honor posed. Since there was no exposure to the tug, to Egan as the owner-operator of the tug, Lisa E., for any discharge of oil from that vessel, or that it was the cause of any discharge from the barge, it was never possibly liable under OPA 90, and thus the policy limit for the tug leasee was never triggered.
No, it was confined apparently because of the oil spilling on it.
Exactly, Your Honor, and appellant concedes that. If we look at page 4 of their brief, they expressly state that the tug was splattered with oil from the barge when it exploded, and as a result, the Coast Guard said, get in the containment boom. Once you're cleaned off of the oil from the barge, you're released and you can go your way. But there was no discharge from the oil, discharge from the tug. There never has been an allegation of any discharge from the tug. It's interesting, Your Honor, that 3.5 years after the spill, 3 years after Great American successfully cleaned up the spill from the barge, expending its full $5 million limit allocated to the barge, Egan is the only party that suggests that it, as owner-operator of the tug, may somehow have responsibility for a cleanup exposure that it never had to begin with. The Coast Guard has never made this allegation. None of the other legal authorities have made the allegation. There's simply no basis for the allegation. Why? Because, as Your Honors have noted, as Egan itself admits and as Egan argued to the district court, the cause of the explosion was the hot load from Exxon, and apparently it being triggered when it passed under some high voltage wires above, completely independent of anything to do with the tug. There's simply no reason to suggest that the tug has any responsibility under OPA 90 or any other theory for that matter to trigger the policy response on behalf of the tug. Egan also makes the argument that the tug itself, the leasee, and the crew of the tug was somehow the operator of the barge, and that triggers OPA 90 responsibility, thereby triggering the policy coverage for the tug. The argument's wrong for two reasons. Number one, OPA 90 itself makes clear that only a person, not, as you heard Egan tell us, an in-rem entity such as the tug, could be responsible, but could be a responsible party. Secondly, and I want to bring this case to Your Honor's attention, it's a case I came across after we saw the reply brief of Egan. Green Atlas.
Did you give a supplemental authority on this?
I'm sorry?
Did you submit supplemental authority on this?
I did not, Your Honor.
Well, you probably should.
Can't cite it then.
Okay. Do you want the citation?
Yeah, you can send a post-argument letter to us with the citation.
The District Court in Oregon construed a situation where a captain was alleged by the U.S. To be a responsible party. The District Court analyzed that in full and recognized that a crew member was never intended under OPA 90 to be a responsible party. So that is not a vehicle for Egan to trigger OPA 90 exposure to Egan as owner of the tug and thus trigger the policy.
Let me just ask you another question, a question about the policy. Do you agree that a finding of liability is not necessary for coverage under the policy?
I agree with that, Your Honor. The way the policy is crafted is to track OPA 90 itself. And when you look at the policy, the coverage starts at B1. We will pay what you have to pay under OPA 90. OPA 90 doesn't require a finding of liability. OPA 90 requires a designation of that vessel as the source of the spill and the owner-operator of that vessel to step in and perform the cleanup. And those are the expenses that the policy responds for. I believe the district court got it right when it simply said the test is whether the owner-operator of that vessel is subject to OPA 90 responsibility. Egan, as owner of the tug, was never subject to OPA 90 responsibility here. The last point I'd like to talk about very briefly is the argument of bad faith that Egan raises. And again, the district court got it right, recognizing that in the absence of a finding of coverage, there can be no bad faith claim. Irrespective of whether you apply maritime law, New York law as the policy calls for, or as Egan argues, although they seem to have changed their position today, Illinois law. In the absence of any coverage, there can be no bad faith, nor on the facts of this case could there possibly be. It is uncontested that within 24 hours of the spill, Great American had a management response team on site that stayed on site from January until the barge was raised in May. During that period, they expended $4.25 million of the $5 million limit towards the cleanup, a cleanup which in May and June of 2005, the U.S. Coast Guard declared successful and complete. In the ensuing months, they received additional bills from Service Welding and the other contractors that had been engaged to respond to the spill, and they ultimately paid their full $5 million limit for the barge. They have fulfilled their duty not only according to the contract, but they fulfilled their duty to their insured, and they fulfilled their duty when the U.S. Coast Guard issued a letter saying the cleanup was complete and successful. Your Honor, we ask that you affirm the summary judgment dismissal by the district court.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yep. Mr. O'Malley.
Thank you very much. One of the documents that survived my water spill is a copy of the MLES opinion. And what counsel was just talking about regarding MLES was this business about a tow line separating and so on in the Coast Guard letter. None of those facts appear in the district court's opinion in MLES. They're not in there. They were not at all part of the court's decision. What the court focused on was that the MLES and its barge were one single consolidated unit. That's very important because the representations that the Great American has been made about why that court ruled how it did are simply inconsistent with the language of that policy and of that case. The second thing the counsel mentioned is that Egan is the only one claiming that its liability arises out of the Lisa E. That gets me back to some very important undisputed facts. First of all, CITGO and the Coast Guard have specifically sent a letter to Egan Marine Corporation noting the fact that the Lisa E was directly involved in the event, and that is all that is involved in coverage. Again, the policy applies where an insured is potentially exposed to liability from an event, and the event we have here was the explosion and the oil spill. The second undisputed facts, what the district court has not mentioned, is the United States government's pleadings filed in the limitation of liability action. Each of those pleadings filed by the government in that action specifically and repeatedly refer to the Lisa E. The United States government has specifically objected to Egan Marine's limitation of liability action under Open 90, claiming that Egan Marine cannot limit its liability for the Lisa E under the Limitation of Liability Act. Very, very important, because the Open 90 provides that the Limitation of Liability Act doesn't apply. The government went in, filed a brief. It is attached to our pleadings and specifically and repeatedly and objects to the assertion that the Lisa E and Egan Marine can limit its liability to the value of the Lisa E. That motion was granted. That motion is part of the pleadings, and that motion was ignored by Great American, and it was ignored by the district court. The final thing I did want to focus on is counsel is asserting that Great American was involved in this cleanup, and they were. I don't dispute that. But the Egan was performed by Dennis Egan. The remediation was performed by Dennis Egan and his crew and his staff, and they funded this. So the contention that I think we're talking about, and Mr. Carbon said in the absence of coverage, there could be no bad faith. Well, that's different than what they said in their brief. They said it was preempted. We demonstrated that was not true. This case was filed in August. That payment that counsel talked about wasn't made until February. 8 months later, this is money that Egan was out and Egan repeatedly demanded, and it was not disputed. It was owed. This is very significant. So there was one line devoted to the breach of the duty of good faith and fair dealing in the underlying opinion.
Well, is there case law that says a delay in making the payments gives rise to a breach of good faith and fair dealing claim?
Your Honor,
there's no case you could cite to support that.
There is case law under Illinois, under Section 155 of the Illinois Insurance Code, that says that the payment of the delay in payment of a claim and delay after the filing of a lawsuit is vexatious, is unreasonable, and the delay in making the payment during the course of the litigation does not relieve the insurance company of its liability for its vexatious and unreasonable conduct. Thank you very much. I see that my time is up. I appreciate your attention this morning. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The case will be taken under advisement.